my iPhone, always my iPhone, my Wahoo and a spare, a cash battery.
Food pouches, socks, gilet, buff, watch, long finger gloves.
I'll take a mini pump, two tyre levers just in case.
Down jacket, pump, Swiss Army knife, little rag for wiping the chain.
Bivy and a silk liner, bibs, jersey, base layer, gilet, rain jacket.
Sleeping mat, little blow-up pillow.
Spare USB cable for the phone and for everything.
Suntan cream, inhaler, toothpaste, toothbrush.
Some headphones, some food and water.
Passport, e-hic, charger, charging cables, waterproof bags, water bottles. And that is probably it.
You are listening to Service Course by The Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa. The stories behind the bikes.
Hi Tom, looking forward to our gravel ride next week. I'm just at Canyon HQ about to pick up a bike.
Right Kira, it's gravel ride. I'm looking forward to it. I've planned a route. We're going to do the Longdendale Trail, which is, conveniently, it's right near my house in Glossop. But we're going to do it with a twist, hopefully, because if we can, when we get to the end of the Longdendale Trail, we're going to take a secret road. But that might involve crossing a river. Look, it'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Service Course by The Cycling Podcast with Tom Wally and Kira McVitie.
So we were played in there by Jonathan Rankin and Matthew Faulkner, listing all the kit that they take with them when they're taking part in rides like the Transcontinental, which they've both been doing. For some riders, that race has just finished. When I last checked, Matthew was hovering. He was one of the favourites, but he was hovering about 17th place. Jonathan was also one of the favourites for that race. He was leading the race, actually, but unfortunately scratched just before control number three. I'm Tom Wally. I'm with Kira McVitie. Hello, Kira.
Hi there, how's it going?
Kira, are you impressed with where I've brought you for our ride today?
I am dead impressed, Tom. You have not let me down. I forget the name of where we are. You'll have to...
Well, we're on the Longdendale Trail, which is a sort of gravel trail that runs from Glossop alongside the Woodhead Pass. We're looking at the Woodhead Pass right now, which is not too far, for those who know, not too far. Well, it's basically, if you turn off it, you're on Home Moss, which is where the riders came over in the Tour de France in 2014. And the reason we're on this ride on the gravel is because today's show is all about gravel rides and adventure rides and the tech and the kit that goes into them. We've got interviews with Sam Pickman, who designed and made probably the most successful gravel bike of the moment. We're also going to hear from some of the mechanics at the Tour de France talking about gravel bikes and the implications of having gravel in some of the Tour de France stages. And we'll hear again from Jonathan Rankin and Matthew Faulkner talking about the essential kit and essential tech that you need when you go on these 4,000 kilometre adventure rides. But Kira, you're also today debuting a new bike.
So I'm here at Canyon HQ with Jack Noy from the marketing department, and you're kindly going to lend me a Grail. Can you tell me a bit about it?
Yeah, that's right. So we've got a Grail CF here for Kira. It's our, I guess, our sort of flagship gravel bike. Underneath this is an alloy version, but this features the almost iconic now, the double-decker handlebar.
Quite controversial. So what's the theory behind those handlebars?
I think the way people use gravel bikes and the kind of riding it promotes is a lot, you know, a lot of the focus on comfort over long distances. And the idea of this is to provide great compliance and comfort while you're on the tops and putting in the miles, but then great stiffness and control when you're in the drops and wanting to attack or negotiate, you know, technical descent.
Plus it looks absolutely mental, and I'm pleased to see the Tamwall tyres too, so thank you very much.
Yeah, that's a new addition for this year. Long may it continue.
A couple of bits of feedback from episode one, Kira. Adam Coatham says, good chemistry. They did well to manage that in episode one. What I would say in terms of a build is that it felt as though it jumped from topic to topic a little. Could have done more with both the bike show and the ride. So maybe deeper diving into one topic. And Rob's son said he enjoyed the interview with Rob Hales and would like to hear more interviews from techie ex-riders, and he'd like a pro race focus, but the tech was a bit too light touch. And we got this from Justin Hills, who suggested some potential topics, including what's the deal with 6.8? 6.8 kilograms is the weight limit that the UCI put on bikes. And obviously, not all bikes weigh the same, so a lot of mechanics have to do hacks to reach that limit. But also, bikes can be made way below that limit.
And so it is a bit of a debate about whether that rule is still fit for purpose. So we put that question to some mechanics at the Tour de France.
Hi, my name is Pim Heemskerk, and I'm a mechanic for Team Sunweb. I think the weight limit can be not abandoned, but can be lower. Yeah, that's up to the UCI. That's not something that I can say. But yeah, it also depends on what manufacturers can do, and it needs to stay safe. So it's not really up to me to say what the limit is to keep it also safe, because yeah, for sure you can make a bite of 5 kilos, but is it then still safe to ride as a pro?
I know everyone he tried to go less. We have less weight on the bike, so for me 6.8 is okay. I'm Fausto Opici. I'm a mechanic from Mitchelton Scott. We need to, every time we need to play with a bike, because sometimes it's so late, so we need to put the weight on. So sometimes it's not easy also for us, because we need to check every time we change the wheels. So also we need to check which weight we have, because the big wheels is one way and the other one is less.
The weight limit is there for everyone. For us, we have to monitor if we do something different on the bike, if we take power meters off or different wheels, light the wheels. We have to monitor it every time just to be safe and not get a rider disqualified or the whole team get kicked out. So that's the big thing. We're always aware of what's going on and we just have to focus on that. I'm Jaki van Steen, mechanic for EF Pro Cycling Team. The previous EVO frames, we had to add weight. Well, now with the disc brakes or the rim brakes, they on the limit, so we don't have to add or anything. So 6.8 is a fairly good weight. For me, for instance, I prefer to go up to 7 kilograms per bike, and that's a round figure for everyone. It's not, you have to play a little bit of this or that, so it's standard for everyone.
This is a really, really good question you asked me, because I think all the teams agree. We have all bikes from around 6.5 kilo. So the UCI say it's for the safety reasons. But if you put like 200 grams of weight under a bottle cage or in a frame, you're not safer with your bike or with a 6.5 kilo.
Jean-Marc, I'm the head mechanic of the CCC World Tour Pro Team.
So they are really behind, and they make a lot of other rules, and they shall more anticipate, like you say, in the years we are now. This is a rule like from 10 years ago. So I think 6.5 kilo will be a fair weight for a bike.
I don't think I've seen Kira have so much fun on the bike, ever. Enjoying it? Kira, what do you think about the UCI? So the UCI weight limit is 6.8 kilograms for bikes. What do you think of it?
I mean, obviously, it's there for a reason, so people don't make bikes made out of pencils or something.
That's true, and they would definitely do that, of course. But I mean, is it still fit for purpose? I mean, you must have ridden some super light bikes in your time, the bikes you get to test.
I have, definitely. I mean, I feel like you can have a bike that's safe that is less than 6.8, but I feel it just stops people going a bit kind of AWOL on the lightness front, because obviously if you push limits there, you're going to end up with very low tolerances for people on the bikes. So, yeah, I mean, people are going more aero over weight, I'd say. But that's a whole other episode, Tom.
That is definitely another episode. Today, we're still on the gravel. And so we're talking about weight limits. Both of us are well over that weight limit because we're both on gravel bikes. Kira, you have had a massive smile on your face throughout this entire ride. I've only been doing it for about 10 minutes.
Tom, it's a grimace. No, but yeah, I am really enjoying it. I mean, for me, it's just about getting out into nature, guys.
And there is something to, I mean, we were just saying, like, the sound of gravel under your tyres is pretty pleasing, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like, you know, if you're riding on the road, maybe you want to do a longer ride, whereas, you know, we're only doing sort of 10, 15 miles today. But when you're doing it off-road, it's a lot of fun, and it's plenty, actually.
So I think we're obviously, gravel bikes have been around for a while now, but it feels to me like the marketing has just finally grabbed hold of people, because I'm a total convert to it. I'm like I said, I'm late to the party. You're even later than I am.
I've like arrived and everyone's gone home. I'm like, oh.
but it's weird. Like, I mean, a couple of mates of mine just this week have both expressed an interest in getting gravel bikes. And like I say, I'm a total convert. It's just a nice sort of palate cleanser when you spend so much time on the road for me.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like the way forward is, you know, gravel bikes and mullets. That's basically it.
Well, I am growing a bit of a mullet at the moment. Let's not talk about my hair. But gravel is featuring more and more in proper bike races. We had a section on La Planche de Belfi in this year's Tour de France. So we asked some of the team mechanics at the Tour de France about the challenges facing them when they're gravel sections in the race, and whether there ought to be full gravel stages in future.
If we have a lot of gravel and dirt, we for sure go for different tire width. We go to 28 or even 30, same like Roubaix, then we ride on 30s. For sure it creates more work, but it also has something mythical. So until a certain height, I think it's okay to have it. But if it has four climbs on a dirt road, no. Like here in the Tour 1, it should be fine. Yeah, it creates work, but that's also part of the job. Eh? It's also, we have some challenges with it, and that's also nice.
Well, actually, if it is such a short piece, we didn't do anything. The only thing, of course, the bikes are dirty. And from my opinion, this have nothing to do in the Tour de France. It's bullshit. We are in 2020 now. I think Fausto Coppi, they went on gravel, but it doesn't make any difference. It's just the show. But there is more and more show in cycling. Yeah, they want to see the show, but I think the show is going on now. We have marvelous, nice stages on normal roads. In the last 10 years, I never saw such exciting Tour de France on 2 or 3 days of the end. So you don't need really the gravel to have the show. Normally, like on this gravel section, you're gonna not win the Tour, but you can lose them. And this can never be the goal from the Tour de France, to get a rider in trouble for maybe one kilometer of gravel. And of course, then you can come back and also say, yeah, you have also the Roubaix stage, but this is then something else. Then there you can be prepared. You go with other wheels, you go with other tires. But if you have like a pretty normal stage and the last K, they send you into the gravel, I can't agree with that. If they do a stage like with 10 kilometers, like with 5 sections of gravel, then of course we're going to anticipate and tires and in pressure, but like for the last 700-800 meters, we don't do it.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car, the back of the pack, please.
That was Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour at the Tour de France, interrupting this episode of Service Course to remind me to tell you that this episode is sponsored by Komoot. Now, Komoot is a free-to-download route planning app, and I've been using it a lot recently. I didn't use it for this route on the Longdendale Trail because I know it very, very well, but I have used it to extend the route and link it up with other gravel tracks in the area. In fact, you can use the With Gravel algorithm on the app to prioritise routing on gravel roads. The great thing about Komoot is it does help you to discover the off-the-beaten track, quieter roads, and you benefit from other locals' tips and recommendations when venturing into unknown territory. Something that's really vital. I mean, I've often used other route planning apps and I've had mixed experiences. I've ended up on a motorway in Girona when that was supposed to be the best route. And around here where I live, I've planned long 100-mile routes and ended up on single-track roads on my road bike, which, you know, you don't want to do. But with Komoot, you can avoid that because it tells you exactly the surface and the type of road you're going to be riding on, and even the type of bike that it's appropriate for. Not only that, but members of the Komoot community also share highlights from their local area. For instance, places to stop and take in the views, good cafes, good downhills, good climbs. As I said, the app is free to download, but Komoot are offering Cycling Podcast listeners a free regional map bundle of their choice. So for these regions, you can save your routes for offline use, use turn-by-turn voice navigation, even track rides in flight mode. All you need to do is go to Komoot, that's KOMOOT.com/G, and enter the code CYCLINGPOD, all in capitals. Sign up, plan a route on Komoot, and enjoy the outdoors. Kira, what are we looking at?
A bit of water, mate.
That is a reservoir. Kira's very... She paints beautiful pictures with her words. That is a reservoir in front of us. We're just about halfway down the Longdendale Trail, looking out over a reservoir. Beautiful hills in front of us, beautiful hills behind us.
You live in a lovely part of the world, I must say.
Well, do you know what? It's great. Thank you for joining me up here, because I do like to share these roads with people. You're the first person that's ever come for a bike ride with me on these roads.
Oh, that's kind of sad for you.
Yeah,
it's you're just telling everyone you have not many friends.
It's a sad it's a sad indictment of my life.
Gravel bike for those who don't have friends.
No, it helps you to meet people and get out there. In fact, actually, I did. Talking about meeting people, I did my first ever proper gravel event recently. I would say it was proper. It was only small scale, about 40 or 50 riders. And it was called the Ronde van Vegas. So here's what went down. And first of all, I asked a few of the riders to tell me about the setup of their bikes. Oh, by the way, there's a little warning here. You're going to hear some very, very strong East Midlands accents. So strong that I can almost feel mine coming back on.
Well, I've got a Planet X XLS. Just changed the wheels. I put some Hunt wheels on it. And, yeah, rides good.
Anything in particular that you've done for this sort of riding, tyres-wise or elsewhere?
No, I've just got some Schwalbe X1s on there, tubeless.
My bike setup, I'm riding a Boardman CX Team, so a cyclocross bike. This is my spare, so it's my training bike as well for off-road stuff. Dead simple setup, really, pretty much as it came out of the factory, but with a different set of wheels, upgraded, and tubeless tyres. So Schwalbe X1 tyres, because they stick like the proverbial.
So I've got a Canyon Grail, the SL Superlight. So yeah, it's a kind of the 2018 model. So it's got like the carbon hover bar for suspension and the split leaf saddle for a little bit more give, partial solution to a problem. But it, yeah, as I say, you know, when the niggles set in, it helps a little bit, as does, but you know, just as much as reducing the pressure on your tyres, obviously. But yeah.
So when you say the hover bar, it's that sort of double decker, it's like a pair of bars, isn't it?
But, yeah. So yeah, it's not much good on the downhills, where you would need perhaps a little bit of suspension, but on the kind of a little bit of a decline and generally the flat, yeah, it takes a sting out of the when you're doing long distances. I love anything a little bit quirky, a little bit different, and I know it's not for everyone's taste, but you know, it's I like the gun position on your downhills as well. So
it's Ridley X Ride. I've bought it new for this year's cross season. I changed one of the rings at the front. I put a 34, so I've got a 34 on the front and 34 on the back, because I'm not great up hills. I think it's got a 46 and a 34. Did have a 46 and a 36, so I dropped it down one. I'm tubeless. I've put new DT Swiss wheels on, mud wrestlers. Be all right for this, I think. I'm going to change them for cross when it gets muddy.
Right, so my bike set up then. So I'm riding my old Canyon InFlight AL 9.0, which I think I got in 2015. It's a cross bike, but I've made some modifications to it for gravel. So the big thing is I've put on specialised Pathfinder Pro tubeless tyres, which I'll be running at about 40 psi. A couple of other little things I've done to it. To the valves, I've added a couple of valve bobbins from 76 Projects. They are handy little sort of like little tiny balls that you put on the valve stem, and they come off and they'll take out the valve core really easily if you need to reseat a tubeless tyre while you're out on the road. I'm riding with two bags, one on the top tube and then a little piggy pouch down below my water bottles, a Lifeline Garmin mount which sits on the front of your stem. It adds to the front plate, and you can mount your Garmin on top of it. But more importantly, when you're doing off-road things, you've got to capture it on video. So it's got a GoPro mount below it. So I've got my GoPro on. and that's it. Other than that, it's still pretty much a standard CX bike. With the big difference is these tyres, and I've got to say I've been really super impressed by them. The interesting thing about these tyres is they've got a nice bit of grip on them, but down the centre they're pretty slick, which means on the road, sometimes I hate riding knobbly tyres on the road, you just feel so sluggish, but actually on the road they handle pretty quickly. So let's see how they go off-road. So this is my first big gravel adventure, Ronde van Vegas 2019. Let's head off.
I've just taken a moment out, about halfway through the Ronde van Vegas. It's a bit of a... I've swapped to my iPhone, by the way, that's why it sounds a bit different. It's been a bit of a learning curve, steep learning curve, to be honest. The first few Ks, I thought, I'm going to hate this. It was all single tracks through woods, very rutted, a lot of roots sticking out and a lot of big rocks. A lot of time I'd just put a foot down or push my bike at times, but since then the road has opened up and been a lot of what you'd consider proper gravel roads. Amazing. And in terms of the bike is just, the tyres in particular, it's the first time I've really run tubeless, and they just seem to, as soon as they get onto the gravel, they just seem to love it. And the experience is not that different from riding on the road. You can put power through the bike, you can trust it. Anyway, I'm in the middle of nowhere. I've been spent a little while catching a lot of riders, and I've not caught anyone for a while, so I think I might be out front, which is just as well, because if anything goes wrong with my bike, I'm not going to be the one to fix it, so it'd be nice for someone to come past. Anyway, right, time to crack on. Let's go find some water. One thing that's letting me down tech-wise is my Garmin today, because it's on such small lanes. I guess maybe I'm not even using it properly, but taking a lot of wrong turns, such as now, where I seem to be in a farmer's field, because the path I want to be on is on the other side of it. Oh, what's a little trespass among friends, eh?
Oh, well, it's over. I don't mind saying that I found that pretty hard. I think what's hard is riding a heavier bike than normal with tyres of lower pressure, but also the fact that the off-road sections, particularly the really technical ones, I just don't have the skills for that. I haven't learned them, so fairly difficult. But on the technical side of things, I've got to say the new tubeless Pathfinder tyres that I've put from Specialized Pathfinder Pros on my cross bike have turned a bike that I actually used to loathe and just leave in the shed into a bike that I absolutely adore. It's so much fun to ride, both on tarmac, as we saw, I mean, at the end of this race, as we're coming in, it ended in a little sprint finish between me and another lad, even though it turns out we were the second and third people in. I pipped him at the line, but yeah, it was for nothing, for the podium places. My bike, on the gravel, it was sensational. On the road, on tarmac, better than an equivalent bike or an equivalent tyre. Yeah, really loved it. But another thing that I've come to realise from doing this is I've always thought, in terms of bikes, that simplicity is what makes a bike beautiful. But actually, there's also a beauty in a bike that's absolutely loaded up with saddlebags, top tube bags, just storage all over the bike. There's something actually quite beautiful about a bike for adventuring.
Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thanks to our sponsors, Science in Sport. I'm not sure if they make a gravel-specific supplement, but if they do, I definitely want to try it. As you've been hearing throughout this episode, we've spoken to various team mechanics at the Tour de France on a variety of subjects. We've spoken to mechanics from CCC, Mitchelton Scott, Sunweb, and EF Education First.
To be honest, I've been cycling for many years. There's no motto. I think it's if you have a motto in the bike, I'm sure that is just you're cheating yourself. I think it's a bad image for the team. My name is Rajan Murugayan. My job is mechanic in the team EF. Believe me, there's no motto. There's nothing such thing. There's a motto in the bike. Believe me. And they, in fact, UCI come and check every day. That's my motto.
Is your job easier now or harder than it was when you started? Because the bikes have got better, more sophisticated, but are they also more complicated every year?
It is more harder now because we compare 10 years ago, we still bring four mechanics for Tour de France. Yet now, with extra material, extra, a little bit different, but we still have four mechanics. I hope we have more extra mechanic that we can make it work better on the bikes so the bike will perform better on the race for the riders.
Finally, Raj, what sort of hours do you work on the tour?
So it depends on the plan race program we get, but we ever since we are here for this Tour de France, we start to get up from 7, we start work 7:30 ready. So it's a long day, these few days. The thing is, the race start late, finish late, and yes, you need to focus on the bike, let's say 3 hours. So if you arrive at hotel 7, you can calculate yourself, 3 hours, 10 o'clock finish work.
When do you eat?
We eat when we have time, but normally we eat. But okay, these few days we eat, like rushing in the last moment, we need to go eat.
Kira, I'm about to do an interview later on with a company called Allied that make gravel bikes, and they made the bike that won Dirty Kanza. Before I do the interview, I'm going to send you a picture of the bike, and I just want your honest reaction to how it looks. So, incoming, watch this space.
Well, first of all, Tom, what the hell is going on with that rear stay? It looks mental.
Kira, can you just walk over? I like the sound of the gravel under your cleats. That's like some great Foley there. Kira, we made it across the river and we found the undiscovered gravel road that I wanted to ride on.
It just keeps going up, Tom. You think you're at the top and you turn a corner and then boom, there's another one.
I think, I mean, really, there's a reason why most people don't ride this, because it's about 25%. There's literally no traction on it. We've mostly been walking, haven't we?
I mean, I thought that I had the power to get up it, and I just didn't. I just lost traction on the gravel, and just kind of toppled over to my doom.
By the way, you've been. We should talk about it. You've been riding a new bike. You've been riding the Canyon Grail. Have you found it?
I have. Do you know what? It has really surprised me. I've ridden a bit of cyclocross, a bit of mountain biking, but I'm just kind of amazed how set up this bike is for gravel. I mean, obviously, it's a gravel-specific bike, but the disc brakes are super smooth. The Tamwall tyres look great. And I have to say, I've got no complaints when it comes to the handlebars. They look a bit crazy, a bit controversial, but I mean, I'm just sticking to the tops, guys, so what do I really know? And I'm finding the seat pin has actually got a split in the middle, which is to aid your suspension, really. And I think that that's making a massive difference, particularly on the gravel. It feels super smooth, especially compared to a cross bike or a road bike.
Well, that's something that Canyon have been doing a while, actually, haven't they? They've got those split seat pins. I've never known, because I haven't ridden anything different on the gravel, so I don't know what effect it's had, but I've been using one for ages. And I've got to say, like, they are quite comfortable.
Yeah, definitely. I've been pleasantly surprised, because I, like you, saw those funky handlebars and I was like, what in the holy hell is that? Just burn it with fire, destroy it. But actually, I mean, I'm not going to say I'm a full convert, but they're not awful.
No, I think the bike you've been riding is particularly beautiful, actually. I've got to say, the more I look at it, the more I covet one. Anyway, we are sat on a gravel road overlooking the Woodhead Pass. We're up at the top of a hill now, overlooking the river. It's pretty beautiful, actually. It's been an amazing ride. We're about to turn round. On episode one of this show, Kira did say that, you know, whenever we did something particularly nerdy, we would have a disclaimer, a nerd warning. It's time to issue the first of those nerd warnings. So a while ago, I spoke to Sam Pickman of Allied Cycles. He designed the Able, which you just heard Kira reacting to, which is probably the most successful gravel bike out there in terms of the races that it has won. This year, it was ridden to victory in both the men's and women's editions of Dirty Kanza, thanks to Colin Strickland and Amity Rockwell. And I spoke to Sam, and we started by talking about how he got into designing bikes.
I mean, I've been in the bike industry for kind of a long time. So I was wrenching on bikes when I was a kid in the local bike store back in Rhode Island. And I always knew that I wanted to work in the bike industry. I went to school specifically wanting to design bikes. So I took classes that sort of, you know, I felt would aid me in that ability. Took classes around composites and design and stuff like that. And then got a job right out of school at Specialized. Worked at Specialized for 11 years. Just had an awesome experience. Worked with some really wonderful people, some friends and mentors that I still keep in touch with. And then left Specialized 3 years ago to help start this project, Allied. And, you know, didn't really have... I had no issues with Specialized. I was ready for something new. I had worked there my entire professional career and was ready for a new challenge, and had always kind of been fascinated with being an entrepreneur, working at a startup, doing something from scratch, doing something that was, you know, completely working on product that was really, you know, reflective of me and the type of riding that I wanted to do. Because at Specialized, it's a bigger team. You work in big groups. They make fantastic product, but you know, you find yourself arguing a lot for the things that you want versus the things that other people want. So it was a really fun opportunity, and yeah, it's been far more than I bargained for working here. That's for sure.
So when you left to set up, you know, to start up the company, did you have a particular style of riding or type of bike or philosophy that you wanted to sort of explore more?
Well, when I left Specialized, I'm like you. I'm a roadie first. I love all types of riding, you know, mountain biking, cyclocross, road. But I was really a roadie, road racer. I was very into it. Towards the end of my career at Specialized, I had stopped racing. I had just had, you know, I'm married, I have a couple of kids, and doing it all was very complicated and couldn't really do anything particularly well. So, stopped racing and just started kind of enjoying riding more, but was still, you know, riding road bikes. There's beautiful roads up and around where Specialized is headquartered. And the bike that I always loved the most was the Tarmac. That was the bike I loved working on the most. It was the bike I loved riding the most. It just sort of boiled down to the essence of what a race bike should be and feel like. And for me, that was the bike I liked riding the most, and the bike that I wanted to work on first was sort of that stripped down race bike. But when I got here, I started riding in the dirt a lot more and just really fell in love with it, and kind of started to turn around ideas for what I felt like the ideal off-road bike should feel like, and you know, was lucky enough to be able to work on it and launch that recently with the Able.
So do you have to, I mean, you know, with a background in road, do you almost have to try and forget what you know about cycling before you start designing something like a gravel bike?
No, not at all. Not at all. Because the general principles are the same. So the one thing about when you talk about a performance road bike, there's sort of certain characteristics around handling, around the chassis stiffness, around fit, that all translates over to dirt riding. It's just adjusted slightly to make it, you know, better performance in those conditions. But the end goal is the same. The end goal is to go fast and to have fun going fast. Like my thing about bikes is I love the escapism. I love just getting away and riding. But more than anything else, I love the speed of riding bikes. I love how quickly you can go on your own under your own power, and I think that's true under dirt and on paved surfaces. So that the same mentality around, okay, this is going to be specific to this thing, right? And that thing for me is, you know, the ability to go fast, to have a bike that does sort of exactly what you want in terms of performance and handling and pedaling, regardless of the surface that you're on. And that's true of all the bikes that we make.
So I want to talk more about the design, because it is quite unique. Can you describe the design of the Able?
So the Able is, like I said, it is leans towards the performance end of a gravel bike. So this is a gravel bike that, you know, is happiest when it's going quickly. The most striking feature on it is the elevated chainstay. One of the main targets when we were deciding to do this bike was we wanted to have it maintain more of a road bike feel, and part of that was keeping the wheelbase short. You have to lengthen the front center of the bike in order to get the steering geometry that you want, but also to avoid toe overlap, which is kind of an issue with some of these higher tire volume gravel bikes. And so in order to keep that wheelbase short, we had to really shorten the rear ends, but we also wanted to have high tire volume. So this bike can fit a 700x43 tire, and you know, with most bike design, you get into sort of a packaging exercise. And when you have tire volume that large and you have sort of chain rings with a narrow bottom bracket, which is 68 millimeters in the road, you just have no room in that area to pass a chainstay through. It's just too narrow. And a lot of companies have dropped that chainstay, but we were, you know, looking at the landscape of the components and we were thinking, man, one buy has gotten so good. And you know, the range of the gears is so good, simplicity is great, and you know, looking at the trend of what happened on mountain bikes, we decided to say, okay, this thing is going to be specific one by. And once we made that decision, it gave us total freedom on what to do with the drive side chainstay, and we decided to go up because as you go up, there is absolutely no limitations in sort of very few limitations in the sizing, so we could have, you know, incredible stiffness without having to worry about, you know, that sort of packaging and the clearance in between the tire and the chain ring.
So we're at this we're at the start of this sort of gravel bike revolution. And I guess at the moment we're sort of seeing the very first iterations of gravel bikes and what gravel bikes are. But obviously they're going to develop over the time. How do you see this type of bike developing and changing?
Well, I think it already sort of has. We're already sort of seeing that play out. Everybody sort of has an interpretation, right? Some people are going more towards, you know, a mountain bike thing with suspension and dropper posts, etc. Some people are going a little bit more towards the roadside where it's stripped down, slightly more aggressive. And then others are going towards, you know, kind of a long-range cruiser with really long wheelbases and sort of very laid-back geometry, almost like an endurance bike with very tall head tubes, short reach, sort of almost replacing what that endurance bike is. And, you know, those bikes are used for sort of more cruising, backpacking, etc. So I think you're already sort of seeing that discretization of the gravel bike. I think when it was first launched, the gravel bike was sort of great because it was sort of the quiver killer, right? You could go put fat tires on it, you can go ride it on some dirt, you can go put some narrow tires on it and go ride on the road. And I think that's still true of some of the models. But in a lot of ways, it's actually started to fragment into sort of these very specific uses. And I think that's pretty standard for any segment. You know, people get out and start enjoying these things more, and they start to, you know, make designs that are specific to the riding that they're doing, or, you know, the type of company they want to be, or the riders they identify with. I think in terms of the future, I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that the e-bikes and gravel bikes are going to start to meld here pretty soon. I think that's probably a year away from that. I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure that out. I think there'll be a lot of sort of fun and funky suspension ideas around gravel to get sort of that 20-30 millimeters of travel. You know, telescoping fork is kind of overkill for about 20-30 millimeters of travel. And so I think you'll see a lot of companies trying to come out with sort of creative solutions around that. But yeah, you know, I think it's always difficult to say. But I would say that's my best bet.
Kieran, now you've been won over by the Canyon Grail and the what do you call those handlebars?
They are the gravel cockpit, I think.
The gravel cockpit. Well, right, you know, they are sort of a double-decker handlebar. And you've got, you know, we've both grown quite used to them. Both think they're quite beautiful. Have you, with the Allied Able, with its asymmetric chainstay, have you been able to see the beauty in that bike now?
I mean, I'm coming round to it, but I partly think that with bike frame design, you know, is there a lot of scope of change that people can make? So part of it, to me, I'm like always skeptical that it might just be a gimmick, you know. So I think by actually testing the bike like I've done today, I'm feeling like maybe it's not a gimmick.
Well, Sam Pickman, obviously, there, you know, he described exactly why they put the chainstay there. It's so they could make the bike much shorter. And it's one of the things in a frame that can make a difference to making a bike shorter. At the start of the show, we were played in by Jonathan Rankin and Matthew Faulkner, two riders who were taking part in this year's Transcontinental Race. They listed the kit that they take with them on these huge adventure rides. We'll play out with both of them now. I spoke to them ahead of the race, and obviously it played out very differently for both of them. We spoke about the choices they make when it comes to their bike setups when they're about to try and ride 4,000 kilometres.
It's a 4,000 kilometre bike ride. Like, so much can go wrong. You read some really good people have injuries 2 days in. I hope I don't have an injury, but, you know, it can happen. And if you base everything on winning or finishing or doing, you know, whatever it is that you aim to do, that could go completely wrong and you could be absolutely devastated. So I suppose at the moment I'm just happy that I've done everything that I feel like I can, and we'll see what happens after that. My name is Jonathan Rankin. I'm racing the Transcontinental Race this year as a solo racer. I've spent a lot of time training and I'm pretty excited to get going now. I would never say that I feel like I've made many mistakes with my, I guess, ultra racing kit, but what's changed is it's just got smaller from those first trips and lighter.
You learn so much when you do these races. You learn so much about yourself, about what your kit can and can't do, and what you can and can't do. Hi, I'm Matthew Faulkner. I'm cap number two in this year's Transcontinental Race. I guess you make a lot of assumptions about lighting and battery power and how long stuff will last. It's kind of a small thing, and maybe it's not as important, but the ability to charge stuff on the go with it from a dynamo hub, stuff doesn't always last, especially when you're bouncing across the bumpy roads of Europe. So I think that first year I had a lot of problems with the single USB cable that I took with me for my iPhone. Having to spend a lot of time, you know, hunting around for a phone shop to get a replacement cable, it was not something that I'd really planned to do. But yeah, it's always something, you know, you come across the problems, you solve them. But if you have a spare cable with you beforehand, yeah, you can get past that a little easier.
I'm an analytical person in terms of, certainly from last year, after I finished, almost the first thing I did when I got home was put 60 titles in a Word document, which were basically every single item that I took on the race, and said, and basically analysed them. Would I take that again? Would I take that size again? Would I take, you know, is 100 millilitres of suntan cream enough to last you 10 days, or do you need more? That it's like that kind of detail that I am good at, and I suppose, like, I almost need something to obsess over in my brain, and like the Transcontinental and the race has allowed me to obsess over things, and so that kind of analysis of my kit from last year to this year, you know, it's just essentially what I did to try and improve on anything, or just to try and remember when I came to buying the little bits and bobs this year, remember what I thought last year and what I wanted to change. I asked Restrap to do pockets in both sides of the bag so I could just keep everything organized. That was a kind of custom thing which I realized that I wanted. But really, there's the equipment that I take is very much kind of off the peg, and actually I'm very happy with it. It's quite simple, I suppose.
A comfortable but also durable and quick bike is important. So I've got a titanium curve Belgi Spirit. I've been using it now for the past two TCRs. So I did it again in 2017 and 18 on this bike. Just having a reliable bike, a strong tool, and you can adapt it and adjust it to make it more durable and suitable, and you know, you can add on kind of customizations to it. So, you know, adding in a dynamo hub, for example, to give you the power on the way. Just having a bike that generally is adapted to, you know, going far quickly.
This year, I'm supported by Fairlight, and so I'm riding the Sekan, which is a steel bike. I rode a steel bike last year. I'm very happy with steel. It's comfortable. Tire choice, I'm going with the Continental GP5000s, which I think they're a good solution. They come up at about 32 millimetres, 33 millimetres on the wider rims that I have. That hopefully should keep it pretty comfortable. And they're quick enough that on the road you're moving relatively quickly, and on the gravel sections they're wide enough that you can ride most of it, and if I have to get off and walk some bits, that's an acceptable sacrifice for me.
I think one of the key adaptions is around gearing. The first two races I had on like a 52-36 chainring and 11-32, but last year I switched to a 48-32. So just basically, you don't need the top end gears. You're never going to be using them, and if you do, you're probably going to be just wasting energy, that sort of thing.
Actually, the one thing I have improved on is on the aero bar armrests. I've bought some kind of thicker foam, which last year I was spending so much time in the aero bars that the foam just squashed, and I was basically had my elbows on metal plates by the end of it. So now I have, I think it's called Evazote foam, and I tried a few different densities of it just to kind of get the best option, which gives you a bit of cushioning but also is sort of squidgy enough that you're not getting jarred around by the bumps.
One of the things I'm really interested in, and this you get this from the amount of time you spend on the bike, you learn a lot. Are there any unique customizations that you've made to your bike, or little hacks that maybe only you use?
Not that many, I guess. So, you know, something like lowering the bottle cage. So you can get these adapters for the bottle cage, so you can fit bigger bottles and a frame bag in. You know, adding a bottle underneath the down tube. They're not really that specific, but just, you know, being able to bolt on additional stuff is quite handy.
Some people run with just lights. The first time I tried dynamo lights, I was just blown away by how convenient they were. I almost rode with my dynamo lights all the time, just to be seen. I am completely sold on a dynamo, and I have one of the Sun dynamos. They're pretty widely regarded as the best option in my opinion. They have a huge service life. I think it's about 50,000 kilometers. You know, even as much as I've ended up riding, that's 2 years worth of riding, which is a lot.
You know, a lot of other racers and in ultra endurance, they do the other things, you know, add in the tri-bars. I'm a big fan of electric gears for these. The first two races I did with mechanical gears, I had really bad problems with my hands at the end of the races. And then last year used ETAP with the, you know, kind of on the end of the aero bars, having the shifters on there, meant that you're not moving around, you're not having to, you know, extend your hand as much. Just much more comfortable. You can stay in a position for longer as well. I do have a power meter. I don't necessarily think it's the most necessary thing for an ultra event. I don't think it adds much weight either, but it's quite nice to have a number there that helps you, you know, helps remind you what power you're doing, and, you know, showing you how you're kind of keeping to your, I guess, plan, if that makes sense, when you're doing a climb, that sort of thing.
Well, the sounds of gravel and rivers have been replaced by the sounds of coffee cups because we're in the cafe. Kira, did you enjoy my gravel ride today?
I did indeed. You can definitely plan me a route in future episodes.
And are you a convert to this sort of riding?
I have to say, you might have convinced me there, Tom.
There you go, you see. It only took us both a couple of years to get on board the gravel riding train.
A bit of mild peril
as well, yeah. That is it for this episode of Service Course. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again next month. Not sure what we're doing next month, but it will be something fun and something techie. We'll be back again next month. But until then, all I need to do is say thank you, Kira.
Thank you, Tom.
And thank you for listening. You've been listening to Service Course by the Cycling Podcast. Music in this episode was by Moscow Youth Cult, and you can check them out via the brilliant Hello Thor Records. And this episode was produced by me,